You're listening to Louisiana Insider, a superlative guide to a great state's destinations, hosted by Errol Labor, executive editor of Louisiana Life magazine.
It's our Louisiana song. It's our favorite melody. It's our Louisiana song. Hearing it echo through the cypress tree.
My cap is from Lee's in LeCompte. You ever been to Lee's?
Oh, yes. I love it there. Not just the pies, but the whole the diner of atmosphere. I do like it.
Yeah, the ham sandwich used to be famous for and all that. You know?
Sure.
You know, Mr. Lee, he was like a Colonel Sanders kind of guy, okay?
Really?
And you go there and you talk really, really loud and you talk about his place. And a couple of times I've been there and he said the same thing. He said, every governor's been here since Huey Long, except Edwin Edwards. Edwin Edwards has never been here. Every governor's been here since Huey Long. So it happens, this is like the last time Edwards was running for governor. Mm-hmm. And I just saw him, and I just kind of went to the side. I said, excuse me, let me ask you something. I said, you know Lee's and LeCompte? He said, oh, yeah. And I said, Mr. Lee says that you've never eaten there. Why is that? He says, I eat there all the time. He just doesn't remember.
You've heard about jambalaya, crawfish pie, and gumbo too. Have you heard about boudin? Down in Louisiana, it's an all-American food. We love that boudin.
All right, that's the late Jimmy C. Newman in one of his songs, Boudin. With me is Dixie Poche, who's written a book called The Cajun Pig, Boucherie's Cochon de Lait and Boudin. She's also written a book about classic Cajun country eateries, and she's out of Lafayette. Thank you, Dixie, for joining us. First of all, Jimmy C. Newman in his song talks about eating boudin early in the morning. Would you do that?
Oh, yes. It's good for breakfast. It's good for snack, lunchtime, and dinner.
Okay, so the all-purpose food.
All right. That's right.
Let's talk about the, actually, there's so much to talk about with pork as I've been thinking about it. First of all, the winter is usually the time for the boucherie. Now, there are some people in this world who don't know what a boucherie is and why they do it. So explain that.
So a boucherie, well, we kind of know what the end result is for the pig. The
sure.
Pig is served.
Not good if you're a pig, right?
No, it's not. And it's a tradition in the wintertime when, before days of refrigeration, when families would have to feed their families and they would have a communal gathering with inviting a lot of cousins. It started at dawn and slaughter the pig, sometimes with a priest coming to bless the pig and everyone would give thanks. For the meal that they were about to have. And usually they would have more than one pig because of large gatherings. And the men would, the men folk would have the table set up and the slaughtering tools, and they would shoot the pig and bleed it. Everyone was involved. The kids might help to gather some of the utensils and help set the table. A lot of the women folk would be indoors and help with cooking rice and preparing everything to make the boudin. So it was a dawn to dusk event, and usually there would be beer served, there would be maybe some moonshine and music. Every family would have some kind of musician in the family, and it would be again in late in the evening, and everybody would take home portions. You can have all kinds of parts of the pigs prepared. You can make tasso, cracklins, they would fry cracklins, bacon, hogshead cheese. So it was a big feast. And they say you use virtually every part of the pig at a boucherie, everything but the squeal.
You know, I remember one time as a kid being taken to a boucherie. This would have been in Valls Parish, Now, of course, I'm a city kid here, and okay, and I'm in a strange environment, and I got kind of queasy, kind of in a hurry with that, especially with the butchering type and all this. I think it takes a country kid to last longer at this. And of course, by 9 o'clock in the morning, they've been working almost a full day. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of activity that goes on in there. Is there any classic pig that's used, any species of pig that's best used for the boucherie or whatever you can get?
I'm sure there are experts that could define certain breeds. I'm not familiar. I just know that it's some big pigs.
A big pig, that'll do it right there. Okay. Yeah, I've also been at something that they do, I guess it's where they have like a pig roast, and where they'll have a pig like on a spit, and sometimes they're cooking them overnight. And and I remember seeing that. It's really that they do it a lot of times, like churches will do this, that they'll roast the pig, and then the next day they'll have like they'll be serving dinner, and people come and they buy dinner. But it's quite a sight seeing those pig carcasses on those spits, and they're red hot. I mean, it's like they're radiating.
Mm-hmm. And that's the cochon de lait, and of course, you know, it's really prevalent in Avoyelles Parish, not just in Mansour, which has an official festival that began in the 1960s, the Mansour cochon de lait, but some of the other communities, I think Bordelonville, and as you mentioned, you know, it's a church fundraiser where they'll start on a Friday and they'll gather the pigs and they'll cut off the head and they'll, you know, keep the head aside to make hogshead cheese later. And they may have 100 pigs set up over an open fire and do sort of a rotisserie. And they stay up all night cooking the pig. And in the morning by 10 o'clock, you can have the most wonderful smell of the pork, of pulled pork. And they prepare plate lunches for that, and also side dishes like dirty rice or rice dressing. So it's a very popular event for these big events in Avoyelles Parish.
And there again, like around 10 o'clock in the morning, people lining up, they got their styrofoam containers and they're getting their dinner, and they go home and they have a big dinner. Let's talk a little bit about the concept of the cochon de lait. A cochon de lait is a milk-fed, it's still a suckling pig, but it's not a little pig, it's a big pig.
Yes, and I guess they just use that term, just a generic term for it. For the Mansour cochon de lait, besides, of course, all the wonderful dishes, they have contests like a greased pig contest, which is, you know, a highlight, I think. A lot of people love watching little kids compete to chase the pig, a small pig, and also an hog calling contest. And I can only imagine how you're supposed to do that.
So a cochon de lait is served there is not necessarily technically always a milk-fed pig. Is that what you're saying? Is it more of a method of cooking?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. You know, cochon de lait is, that used to be a country food and it still is, but it's pretty well known in New Orleans because of the Jazz Fest. And back from when the Jazz Fest first started, there was a vendor that came and he started serving something called cochon de lait poor boy. And it is one of the favorite items there. I mean, people stand in the line, and it's really good, too. I think that's why. And so that particular vendor has given cochon de lait some kind of a reputation in New Orleans. Anyway, let's talk about some of the different products that are made from the pig. I guess the most famous is the boudin. The boudin comes, what part of the pig does the boudin come from?
Well, I guess I'd say the best part of the pig. They'll throw in a bunch of things in there. I know that a lot of people like to compare. They'll do tasting of boudin from different meat markets, old-time meat markets, and they like the ones that have liver in it. So some boudin places, now they're trying, instead of white rice, they'll use cauliflower rice for health reasons. So guess it's kind of bragging rights too. There's so many different types. There's, you know, the smoked boudin links, the blood boudin, which a bourgeois meat market in Thibodeau still prepares that. There's boudin egg rolls, which are sort of fried. boudin balls. So all kind of variation, just because it's so popular. It's so easy to handle.
So a boudin would be sort of like cuts of the pork meat, kind of just combined together and seasonings and all that, and then put into some kind of casing. And so there are boudins of different types and different flavors.
Yes, yes. And again, on the fancier boudin, I guess boudin balls, they'll add cheese to it. There's boudin cook-offs, of course. In Lafayette, we have a boudin cook-off. Scott in Lafayette Parish has a boudin festival. And
isn't there a store in Scott that's famous for its pork products? Or
gosh, there's probably six.
Okay.
Six places in Scott. There's the Best Stop.
Best Stop. That's what I was trying to think of. Yeah.
Yes.
You ever go to a gas station in the area and they have boudin, but it's under like a hot light by the cashier in the gas station? That always seemed to me kind of dicey right there.
Well, they'll usually pick up the boudin from another a qualified meat market.
Okay.
So I would trust that.
Okay. What do you think about the idea of boudin balls? Or should it be like a sausage type link kind of thing?
It's fried, so it's not really in the casing. It's just it'd be like a little meatball, I guess.
Yeah, so it's not technically really a sausage kind of thing.
No.
But
no.
They use the word boudin, yeah. Yeah.
And you're talking about sausage, of course, there's other parts of the pig they'll do andouille. And they'll do, of course, smoked sausage. And, of course, there's tasso. And a lot of these people that cook gumbo, they have their certain ways of doing it, and they like to throw all of that in just to affect the taste of the chicken and sausage gumbo.
Well, could you kind of help us define this between tasso and, like, andouille? If I wanted one of the others, what's the difference between them?
Tasso is almost like a ham. It's smoked, and andouille is smoked too, but it's thicker chunks of the pork meat.
Okay, and so it seems like tasso comes more from the rump part of the pig. Is that correct?
Yes, it's from the pork shoulder, and it's cured. It's cured and smoked. Right. So you can cut off even little pieces of tasso can add something to your dishes, gumbo or red beans and rice.
Okay. I think I might be wrong about this. I think that's a German influence, isn't it? They kind of, I know some of the parish, I know like around La Place and those areas closer to New Orleans where you have German settlement that you see tasso being cooked. I don't know.
Yes, but also around Acadia Parish at Roberts Cove.
Okay.
The German community there too. So a lot of influence too on some of the pork dishes, but also some of the music, you know, the accordion.
Okay. All right, let's get serious here with the products in cracklins. Do you eat cracklins?
I do, but not very much of it. It has such a strong taste, but you know, it's expensive. I think you can, you know, it's about $21 a pound for cracklin.
I know. Yeah. There was a place I went to one time and it was like, I think it was like a half pound. It was $8, which kind of surprised me. But you know, cracklins, when it's done right, okay, when it's kind of out of the pot and when it's cooked well and it's still a little tender and a little sweet and a little salty, can really taste good. But you don't want to be eating that every day. I mean, it's not exactly health food.
No, and some of the meat markets around here now are doing chicken cracklins, which are a little bit, they're blonder in color, but a little bit healthier.
And what makes them a cracklin? Using the skin and making the skin kind of deep fried? Or?
Yes, it's still deep fried. And, you know, I used to be squeamish growing up about a lot of these dishes, but, you know, I'm willing to try it at least once. Of course, cracklin, I grew up with that, but other things too, like hogshead cheese, blood boudin. Chef John, one of the reasons I got this idea of writing a book about boucheries is I attended Chef John Fulce's annual Festival of Butchers at White Oak Plantation in Baton Rouge. And there were 75 chefs from across America demonstrating and preparing some dishes relating to boucheries, but also some other things. They did have blood boudin. They had smoked raccoon and rooster stew, and rabbit.
Is that once? Is that one stew, smoked raccoon and rooster? That's one stew right there?
That's correct. That's one combination.
Okay.
Yeah, and...
Kelly, our producer here, is shaking her head. No.
I had the same idea. I said, well, you know, I can sample it. And it was wonderful.
At least it wasn't possum. Okay, and so, I'll give it that, okay? So what else do they have?
They had rabbit and pork sauce piquant. That's one dish. And they had things like pork tamales. And as you walked around, everyone could watch and speak to all of the chefs, too, as they were preparing. So they opened, there was a simmering pot, and in it was a pig's head and his feet floating. So that was in preparation for making hog's head cheese. And across the room, the area, there was someone with stirring. It looked like a pot of, to me, it looked like chocolate pudding. So close up, I went, it was actually, of course, the blood, because that was in preparation for making the blood boudin.
Yum, yum. Okay. When you get these things and you mix all these meats together, don't they kind of like counteract each other and you really don't get the flavor of any of them?
No, because I think the slow cooking is really makes it a good combination. And of course, they say layering of seasons, but it's also the layering of all of the flavors.
Okay. It reminds me, you ever have these turduckins, which is a duck's stuffed inside a turkey, and there's a chicken stuffed inside the duck? You ever have that? You ever see that?
Yes, I have. So there were two stories about where that originated, conflicting stories. One was that it was from Chef Paul Prudhomme of Opelousas who invented this. The other is that there's a store in Maurice, Hébert Specialty Meats, that they invented it. And as you said, it can be different combinations, but it was a duck, a chicken, and a turkey. And all deboned and layered, and it's so, so very popular now, not just in Louisiana, but now all over the United States.
Well, maybe my one experience wasn't good, but it kind of seemed like if you wanted a duck, get a duck. You know, if you wanted chicken, get chicken. But to kind of have them all together and the juices and everything just kind of blended, it seems like, I don't know, these meats should have their own identity. But again, what do I know? Let's talk about how hog's head cheese. By the way, we've got to throw in the French names here. We're talking about cracklins, and cracklins is known as gratin in a lot of the French country. Okay. And by the way, we'll talk about a little bit about this. There's this item that you can get like in a convenience store. It's called fried pork skins, and it's sort of like cracklins, but not the same thing. It's more of the pork skins, just kind of like deep fried and popped up or something. Whereas a real cracklin has like a little bit of the meat left in it. So you have the pork skin and then you have a little chunk of the meat. And so it's just, that gives you really the multitude of flavors in there.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think that it's the pork belly meat that is used in preparing cracklin.
Oh, the cracklins. Okay. All right. Hog's head cheese. First of all, if I was a hog head cheese manufacturer, I go to New York to Madison Avenue and I hire one of these agencies and say, hey, look, can you come up with another name for this product? It's a good product, but the name hog's head cheese seems to me like a tough sell. All right. But anyway, when done right, it's very, very good. And I remember that time at the boucherie that they had all this stuff that they make the hog's head cheese and then they put it in these sacks. And then they hung the sacks to like a clothesline, and then they do whatever cheese does and kind of ferments overnight or something. Do you ever see that?
Yes, and because hogshead cheese is really not cheese. It's just a jellied meat with a consistency of pate, and a lot of people enjoy it as an appetizer and use it with crackers.
Oh yeah, well, when done right, it's really, really good. I mean, it could be a really good hors d'oeuvre, and in places in the New Orleans area that sell it, tend to have like a regular flavored one or a spicy version, and it's really popular. It's just a fun thing to watch being made, I guess. The gumbo. What's the best use of pork and gumbo?
Well, I like when I cook a chicken and sausage gumbo. My mother taught me we would do smoked sausage, but also fresh sausage, and also tasso.
Okay.
And of course, cooking it. When I make gumbo, it takes me all day, and I make a mess out of it also. But I'm trying to pan fry the chicken as my mother taught me, all the sausage, and just cook it down for a long time and use roux, make my own roux. So it's an all day event.
So you make your own roux. I mean, that right there is worth like a gold medal, you know?
I've burned it a lot though. Yeah. So through the years I've taken some advice and slowed things down, maybe have a glass of wine on the side, so I'm more relaxed and I have more patience that way.
But if you burn your roux, I mean, the roux is the first thing you do. And so if you start off by burning it, you're in trouble with everything else that follows.
That's right. Then you start all over.
You know, we have one of our food writers for Louisiana Life that we interviewed a few weeks ago. We're talking about this very topic about gumbo and roux. And he's a real purist. I mean, he understands the importance of making your own roux. But the other time he says, you know, gumbo should also be kind of like a convenience kind of food. So you're at work one day and you want to make some gumbo. It shouldn't take you all night to do it. And so he's accepted the idea of prepared roux. And I think in his case, it was savoise that he uses. And so was willing to accept it just to kind of like hasten the process. And then, of course, puts in all of his ingredients.
Well, I think that's fine. Not every place. For example, I have my son lives in Austin. I don't know if they have bottled or canned roux there. So he'll make it from scratch.
So. I wouldn't think so. Yeah. I think they got lots of barbecue sauce, though. But I think that they have a lot of that. All right. We have a little segment here called This or That. Okay. And it's just simple comparative type questions. And Kelly, our producer, has come up with them. Kelly?
All right, Dixie. So the first one, we talked about a couple of these, so we should have them fresh in our mind. But the first one is cracklins or fried pigskin?
Cracklins.
Agreed. I have to agree.
Because that's more the real thing that has the meat in it. That's kind of the real thing. But we all agree you wouldn't want to eat this every day, all day, or anything like that.
Yeah. So. And you can add cracklins when you're baking cornbread. If you crush it down, it just adds so much spice to cornbread.
I am making a note of that. I did not know that.
Well, I can tell you, I remember as a kid, I mean, my roots were through Voiles Parish, and going to relatives, a common breakfast. I mean, people didn't know about cereal. I mean, you never see people buying cornflakes or anything like that. Okay, but the common breakfast, we have a big pot of cornbread, and this person there was little pieces of cracklins, okay? And so when they do it, they just mix it in there, and it was good.
That's okay. Like a dream.
Yeah. You didn't want the whole cracklins, but you want it kind of broken up and mixed in there, and it was really it was really good. Is that what they refer to as couscous, or is couscous is sort of like related to that, I believe?
Well, couscous would be a cornmeal, but some families, if they wouldn't prepare couscous every day, they would use cornbread and crumble it and eat it with milk. I understand now why people back then, my mother's time period would eat that. It was very economical and easy. And that way you were frugal. You used up cornbread maybe from the day before.
And of course, all this brings to mind what has been a common football cheer, like I think at LSU and at ULL and all of that. Hot boudin, cold couscous, come on, Tigers, come on. Push, push, push.
Push, push, push. I'll say come on, Cajuns, though.
Yeah, so. okay. I've always wondered if, like, the students in the stand have any idea what they're talking about.
Especially,
I mean, the hot boudin they would, but not the cold couscous. Okay. So.
Okay. Speaking of Boudin, white or red Boudin?
Oh, white.
What about you, Errol?
Oh, I don't touch the red. Okay. Okay. I mean, there was a time I had it. It's really a blood sausage. And it's not too common anymore either. And I think there's pretty stringent laws. Like, if I understand, you can't sell red Boudin retail. I mean, you can only buy it at the place where it's made, on the premises. And so it's kind of a little bit harder to get, but it's just not, I'm not quite, I guess it's the equivalent of the British, their blood pudding. I mean, every culture has some kind of thing that they make out of blood. And, yeah, but the white, but you know, the other thing though, and I don't know if this is a concern or not. Okay, you had red Boudin and white Boudin. When you're talking about white Boudin, it was all pretty much just Boudin made with pork meat and then rice and a few spices and put in the sausage case. Now you're starting to see things like crawfish Boudin. Yeah. That's not really Boudin, okay? I mean, you know, to put something in the case with rice doesn't give you a right to just automatically call it Boudin, you know, so. But anyway, yeah, I agree with the white Boudin, okay.
Okay, we just kind of talked about this one. So smoked sausage or tasso?
Smoked sausage.
Okay, because just more flavor possibilities or?
Yeah, the consistency, I just prefer it.
Okay, I agree. I think it's better also, like if you want to do like a poor boy or something like that, it probably works better, yeah.
And the last one is roast beef or cochon de lait.
Oh, cochon de lait.
Okay.
Agreed.
Oh, right. Gosh, now I'm hungry. I
know. All right. So it sounds like that you're an accomplished cook. Like if you were having a special meal, and of course it involved pork, what are your big dishes? What's your best dishes?
Okay, so are you familiar with ponce? P-O-N-C-E.
Is that part of the stomach?
Yes. It's actually the lining of the pig's stomach.
I always
Teats in Ville-Platte is one that's well known for preparing this. And it looks like a roast. So really, you can't tell what it is. So they'll take the stomach lining and they'll stuff it with sausage meat, all ground up, prepared that way, and then you can smoke it or you can bake it in the oven. And what's funny, I think that Teeth is was in one of my books, and they have these bright T-shirts in the store that say peace, love, and ponce. You know, it just popularizes the whole ponce concept, and you know, people just love preparing that, and it's a roast. So that's the sort of thing I would do. It would be easy. So Teats does all the work for me. It's all seasoned. I just bake it in the oven.
Well, and is that sold in many places?
Yes, you do have it. It is very popular around here. But in Ville-Platte, of course, they have the Smoked Meats Festival in Evangeline Parish. Basile has the Swine Festival. So I'd say it's more in the prairie area of Ville-Platte.
You know, this brings up a point that the image of Cajuns is as seafood eaters, but really more than seafood eaters, they're really pork eaters. I mean, I guess the ones that live down in my home in Thibodeau might eat more seafood or something. But as a rule, I mean, Cajuns are meat eaters.
That's correct. And that's from history. You know, as far as availability and I guess easier, I mean, and inexpensive to raise a pig, in theory. I'm talking about way back when, and the pigs would just run free, whereas now, of course, it's commercial farms, and not everybody has a pig.
Mm-hmm. Do you all have many feral pigs around there?
There are, well, I remember at Chico State Park around Ville-Platte, yes, there's feral pigs. So yeah, it's a problem. There's also, of course, coyotes, but we won't eat the coyotes.
But I wonder if the feral pigs good to eat, or are they just meaner and tougher?
They are. You're correct. They are tougher. That, you know, that gamey taste. It's not my favorite.
Yeah. Okay. Now you also have another book called Classic Eateries of Cajun Country. Could you name like three of your favorite Cajun country classic eateries.
Oh, sure. Well, we spoke earlier, Lee's Pies in Central Louisiana. That's one of my favorites. It's from, I think it started in a garage, really, in the 1920s. And one of the most famous customers with Outlaws, Bonnie and Clyde, actually stopped by Lee's Pies in the 1930s.
Oh, really? Okay. Okay. So Lee's, that's the cap I'm wearing, and that's in LeCompte.
Correct.
Yeah, I
love that. You know, and I look for the story behind, like the old-time eateries, the mom-and-pop places, the ambiance, and, of course, the meals there, too. I also like in Lafayette, we still have Borden's Ice Cream near downtown Lafayette, and that's the only remaining true Borden's ice cream, old-fashioned ice cream parlor. We still have that in Lafayette. It has a retro look. It was built in the 1940s.
Okay.
I also like, this is not a restaurant, but I think it's interesting. In Jennings, downtown Jennings, there's the Tupper Merchandise Museum, and it's a treasure trove of a store from the early 1900s. An old general store used to have everything, and it still has exhibits of medicines like Hadacol, if that's considered a medicine, a collection of vintage kitchen aprons, cooking utensils, dry goods, toys. So it's really a walk back into time to see how the social life of how people lived in the early 1900s up until, I think, the 1970s when the store closed, and this is in Jennings. It's a really great nostalgic appeal. It's good for children and adults to visit. I do enjoy looking back at some of the old time places.
You know, on your book, The Classic Eateries Cajun Country, you have a montage of pictures on the cover. And one of them is a place called Adam Pontius, which is in Big Bend, Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And as it happens, I know that place. That area, so the legend goes, one time there was a plantation there that one time was owned by some gang that was tied in with the mafia. And Al Capone lived in that area for a while.
Oh, goodness. I did not know that.
You had the other story. You had Bonnie and Clyde. Then you had Al Capone. And they used to be able to come down the bayou. At that time, they come up from New Orleans and the Atchafalaya, then go down by the Glaz, and they can come to these little towns like that. And so it was good refuge for these places. Before we go, let me bring up one ongoing issue we have here by gumbo. When you eat your gumbo, do you put sweet potato in it?
I'm sorry, I can't do it.
Why?
It just kind of works against me.
Okay. So you eat possum, what is it, raccoon stew?
Yes. So when I was growing up, I'm from Cecilia. My mother, homemaker, I'd come home from school, and she'd always have something cooking. Then she did the homemade bread, etc. So I'd ask, what's cooking? And so she said, well, what do you like? I said, well, I like chicken. Well, that would go on every day, but actually she was cooking all kinds of stuff like squirrel and blackbirds or something. So I didn't know better. When I was young, she could fool me, and it tasted wonderful. So I was kind of tricked into trying some of these dishes, but I did enjoy it. You know, this rice and gravy stuff, that's part of what we grew up on.
Rice and gravy is a real Cajun country classic, and it's just yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. I mean, when we have a really good hearty gravy. Did you ever confront your mother about misleading you about the squirrel versus chicken?
Yes, but we all laughed about it.
Okay, all right.
Absolutely.
How's the whole food scene over there doing, like with the whole COVID crisis, everything? Are the places holding up? Or?
Oh, it's difficult. I mean, that's pretty obvious. I'd say a lot more people are cooking their own meals and doing takeout. But these meat markets, they're doing well because it's you know, a lot of ready-made, you know, the boudin. So with boudin, you can also take the meat out of the casing, form it like a hamburger patty and pan fry it.
Okay.
So, yeah, and you can serve it on a biscuit and you can do a fried egg on top of it. So there's a lot of variations you can do. So we know we have old-time po'boys here in Lafayette and they're doing well. You know, we do have places that are open and for takeout too.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. It's been, I've learned a lot. Good luck on your, it's a fun beat you have covering these kind of places. Do you have another book in the works?
Oh, I'm hoping to do one about the Courier du Mardi Gras.
Oh, really? Okay.
Oh, I'd love that. That's such an exciting time. We won't be having that exciting time this Mardi Gras, but I've attended some in the past, and I think it's just fascinating.
Okay, when you're ready, contact me, because I can talk the talk on that, too.
And oh, so, great.
Yeah, I'd love to talk to you about it and get this. So, all right. This has been Dixie Poche, who has a book called Cajun Pigs, Boucheries Cochon de Lin Boudin, another one about classic eateries in Cajun country. It's available, I guess it's available online.
It's online, and I have a third book.
Okay.
It's Louisiana Sweets, and it's about king cake, bread pudding, sweet dough pie. In the same vein, I go to old-time kind of eateries and talk about the history of some of these dishes.
Okay. Well, king cakes and bread pudding, I know about. But what's that third thing you mentioned? Sweet dough pie.
So Grand Coteau in St. Landry Parish has an annual sweet dough pie. It's a hand pie. It's a fried hand pie filled with fruit or with, or they call it a tart, T-A-R-T. It's easy to handle too. You can have sweet potatoes puree in there or blackberry. It's wonderful. So it's something my mother, you know, baked while I was growing up. It's just a little bitty treat, but it's just wonderful.
Wow. Is the king cake thing getting pretty big over there too?
Oh my gosh, there's all varieties. There's so many, and a lot of them are shipping out. There's Keller's Bakery, that's an old bakery here in Lafayette, Poupart's. Some of the places are doing the boudin king cake, which that's certainly an acquired taste. So it is very popular here.
I've heard of that, and I'm willing to try to acquire it. It sounds like something that would be, I could see it working, yeah, okay.
So Twins Bakery in Lafayette does do the boudin king cake.
Okay, well good. Well, I have a hunch with Mardi Gras being quieter than usual this year, that it's going to be a good year for king cakes, because I think a lot of people might have their own little parties, and when you have your own little party, you have king cake, and so I think it'll be good. So
I agree.
Anyway, thank you very much for joining us. It's been delightful.
Oh, thank you. I enjoyed this so much.
Thanks for listening to Louisiana Insider. Subscribe, like, and rate our show where you listen to your podcasts, and follow us on social media at Louisiana Life Mag. Executive producer for Louisiana Insider is Kelly Massico, in cooperation with Louisiana Life Magazine. For subscription information to Louisiana Life, call 504-828-1380. Our theme music was provided by Rich Collins. Hey, that's me. Join us again next week for more discoveries inside Louisiana.